Welcome to episode 3 of season 2 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Monday the 27th of April and I'm Davey. With me this week are Tony.
Hi Dave, how you doing?
Not too bad.
What have you been up to this week?
That was unexpected. That was rather unexpected.
That was rather unexpected. We'll come to that.
Oh, okay.
Alan, hello.
Hello, Tony, what have you been up to this week?
I was going to ask you that. What have you been up to this week?
I've done some packaging.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we'll probably talk about that more another time, but
How is your packaging?
It's hard, actually. It's not as easy as you would have thought.
You're worse. And Simon, hello.
Hello. You've finished, have you? Well?
Yeah, okay, it's fine, thanks. Fine.
And we've also got in the studio our lovely producer, Laura. Hello, Laura.
Hiya.
What have you been up to this week?
Oh my God.
I've been playing with Jaunty in its various forms. I've downloaded the disc and done a clean install, and I've been playing with the netbook edition, which I don't like.
Did you jump on the download it as soon as it's out? Or
No, I did jump in and say, in fact, it was too
late.
Is it out yet? And I'd see the email.
Somehow I can imagine Simon sitting there hammering F5, refresh, waiting for it to appear.
No.
You're not using Crunchbang then?
Yeah, I am. But I installed the new Jaunty with GNOME on a spare box. And the netbook had a play on the 701 on the EPC. And delete. Back to Crunchbang.
Excellent. Well, I think we've covered what we've all been doing this week. So what's in the show?
We have a thing called Chip Off the Old Block.
Of the old block.
Block. Actually, I think that should be Chip Off the Old Block.
Uh-huh.
Popey from the block.
We're going to talk about the big release that has been Jaunty.
What's that then?
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll talk about news and events as we always do.
Community clash.
Yeah, talking about the stress in the community. We've got the results of the competition.
Hang on, didn't we have the results of the competition last time?
I remember editing that.
Yeah. I remember recording that bit, yeah.
I'll put my hands up to
saying... Hang on, it was in the release notes as well.
It was in the release notes. I'll put my hands up to saying that I forgot to put the competition result audio in the last show. But then I would also like to point out that everybody in this room listened to the episode before release and still failed to spot that it wasn't in the show.
Well, I blame the QA team, to be honest.
Yeah.
We're just the audio.
Let's blame Schwack, he's not here.
Yes, that's good.
We've got the latest from the Ubuntu Ecosphere.
Seriously, do we have to keep that name?
Suggestions to podcast at ubuntu-uk.org, please.
Yeah, and we have your feedback. Along with Jaunty coming out, there's lots of other derivatives coming out as well.
What is a derivative?
Perhaps the best thing to do would be to give some examples, like Kubuntu, which is the KDE-based derivative.
Yes,
Ubuntu.
Or Zubuntu, the XFCE one, or Crunchbang.
All right. That's a different kettle of fish, because we've got official ones and we've got unofficial ones. Now, another one is Mythbuntu.
Yep.
I don't know if that's very popular, though.
No.
I don't know. Do some Google trends.
Development.
Ubuntu Studio.
Yep.
Mint.
There we go, because Mint and Crunchbang are probably in the same boat, aren't they?
What way?
As in they're not official.
Going on holiday.
What's official got to do with it?
It's
a derivative.
Aren't they all derivatives of Debian, then? Ubuntu?
Yeah, in a way, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were thinking, well, those are the current derivatives that are out there, but you know, what derivatives would you like to see, or we like to see? And producer Laura's put it on Twitter and Identica, and we've got some suggestions and things coming from the great and the good community and of UPC listeners. What ideas and suggestions have we had then, chaps?
Oh, that would mean switching on my laptop.
Asterisk Buntu is a possibility. Comes pre-configured to basically get your SIP phone going.
Yeah.
That's a possibility.
You'd like that? Yeah, I would. Yeah. Just because it looks like a lot of effort.
But the thing is, that would be a world of headache in itself, because there's so many different ways of setting up an asterisk setup.
That's no different to Mythbuntu, though.
No. But it is. I mean, there are already some derivatives, some asterisk setup CDs. Like there's PBX in a Flash, which is based off CentOS. And there's also Trixbox, and this is where we'd normally insert the audio snare, but that's another one as well.
Are they a bit like sort of IP copies to firewalls?
Yeah.
So you've got a nice web GUI to do the administration, and it all happens under the surface.
Yeah.
So there's clearly a requirement for that kind of thing, then, for that specific one, asterisk.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And on Ubuntu, any reason why not given there's one on CentOS?
Well, the thing is, some of the stuff that goes in it isn't packaged to set up terribly well. Like one of the GUIs for actually using it isn't, there's not very good packages for that. I did talk with someone else about actually setting it up last year, and it is on the to-do list. But
it, that's in the same boat as Mythbuntu. When you started looking at Mythbuntu, surely some of the Myth packages weren't perfect in Ubuntu, and that's why one of the reasons why you would have done Mythbuntu, surely?
Well, no. If you, I mean, the thing is, you can get exactly the same result using a Ubuntu install and a Mythbuntu install, and it's exactly the same development team behind Mythbuntu as it is the MythTB patches on Ubuntu. So the packages were pretty good to start with.
What, now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, and then the packages were pretty good to start with, to be honest. So
okay.
Okay, one of the other suggestions was Podcastbuntu, or Podcastubuntu, which comes with the necessary stuff for recording and editing audio, a bit like Ubuntu Studio, but a bit less heavyweight, because Ubuntu Studio is like a billion megabyte download DVD thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, can you imagine the effort to set that? That's huge for such a small... Well, to set up a whole distribution for podcasting.
Well, no, if you look at... if you go into PC World, you'll find there's... like podcasting in a box things, which is like a cheap rubbish microphone and a CD that contains Audacity. But you could equally package together a microphone and a live CD or a USB stick that's got Ubuntu and the necessary audio stuff. So, yeah, okay, it could end up being Audacity or Ardour or whatever else. Hmm. But it would be a nice way for us to get the podcasting community, which, you know, we are part of, and there are quite a lot of other podcasters out there,
Particularly if it came with some sort of tools for doing the hosting and things as well, so yeah, integrated into the various services.
That could be part of the package. You know, if you pay £50, you get the microphone, the CD, plus you get a year's worth of hosting of up to 1 meg a week or something like that, you know.
Crikey, you're letting out all your marketing secrets.
I know. Right, can you edit this out?
Yeah,
I know we're doing it live now.
We'll put it out. We'll put it alongside the competition result from the last episode.
What else we got?
Now, the thing is, I can't help but thinking that a lot of these things, does it really need a whole separate distribution on a separate disk? I mean, wouldn't it be nicer just to have like an extra advanced option on the installer? I mean, as it is, a lot of the things are quite well split up, like got Ubuntu Desktop and Kubuntu Desktop, which are meta packages, and you can just install that on, so you can install KDE and Kubuntu on Ubuntu system by installing one package.
So you're saying that there shouldn't be a separate KDE, a Kubuntu CD, and a separate Zubuntu CD? It should be like a base CD, yeah, and then you add the extra bits you need for, yeah,
I mean,
whichever package.
There's no way it'd fit on one CD, but I mean, no, we've got to start thinking about DVDs soon, haven't we, really, you know?
Well, we do. We have DVD images of all of them.
But I mean, who actually, I mean, have you ever burnt a Ubuntu DVD ISO?
No.
Yeah, nor have I.
Meh.
Yeah. So, but we've got to start thinking about that soon, because we're trying to squeeze more and more into such a small area now. It's really trying to cram it in.
Yeah.
Okay, what have people been saying on the Twitter and the Identica?
What about Limeybuntu with metric conversion tools in the root window?
Right.
Thanks, Lopter.
Is that for those people around the world who don't do metric?
Yeah, I suppose so.
There's how about Ubuntu Twitter Edition, where all the programs can use a maximum of 140 characters. Okay.
That sounds good. Similarly, Textbuntu, where everything is translated into text speak.
Oh, my God.
Which would be very annoying. And Phil Wyatt is a little bit embarrassed that he thought of that.
Well, actually, that's something that Scott James Ramnick come up with at one of the UDSs, was actually having a translation of Pirate. So people could test translations in their applications by using this language file where it's basically based on Pirate speak. So it would say, arr! And I think that's quite a neat idea.
Sorry, Dave, what would it say?
Arr!
Okay, just checking.
Okay, moving on. Ubuntu Boink from Dave1022 on the Twitter.
Is that you know, code of conduct friendly?
Yes, yeah. Boink is it's a dedicated distro that runs Boink without any GUI and a super efficient kernel. So Boink is the distributed computing thing for doing protein folding and loads of other stuff, prime calculation and all that malarkey. But I don't know, is that still popular these days? Is that still...
It's not very green, is it?
...politically correct to be chewing up CPUs at maximum, you know, warp?
And making your house hot.
I mean, finding a cure for cancer, that is, you know, it's more important that we're green to the planet rather than find a cure for cancer.
Yeah, but you can probably get more cycles out of a dedicated data center and, you know, a tuned server than you can out of my old laptop.
Yeah, but who's paying for that?
The planet.
Oh.
Man, it's not start.
Oh, take that Yippies. Bandana off.
Matt Daubney has suggested a Paranoid Live CD with full security settings and really depressive theme and error messages.
Hang on, according to someone recently, aren't we already doing that in Jaunty?
Like,
joke.popey.com. And I had some ideas of myself, which I might share with you. Pub Buntu, which doesn't let you use it after three drinks. So I've got a breath test.
Like the Google thing that stops you sending mail after 10 o'clock or whatever.
Yep. Grub Buntu, which has integrated reminders of meal times.
Oh. Yeah. You could do that with a package, really. Actually, that's a good idea. Eat now.
Yeah.
Oh, we should have Twitter Buntu, where it helps you twit.
Which is one of the suggestions about 3 minutes ago.
Yep.
Welcome to the show, Dan, mate. Well, thanks for your thoughts, everybody. And I think we've got some really good ideas for some distros, and we're all going to go away and make them.
You two were partying last week, weren't you? In town. Tell us about it.
Were we? Yes. Where you don't remember.
Oh.
It was that good.
Release party for Jaunty, then.
Yes. Thursday.
Waxy O'Connor's?
Yeah, no.
No, it was the last one.
That was the last one, yeah. This was, oh my God, I can't even remember where it was.
It was the place with expensive drinks.
God, they were expensive.
It was like £3.60 for like a normal bottle of...
A tiny bottle of beer.
Tiny bottle.
Yeah.
£3.60.
It was a bit of a rip-off. That's the downside. The upside is there were loads of people there. It was like 100 and something, 180 probably.
Wow. Yeah, probably about that, yeah. Yeah, it was always nice to see the usual faces, and there were some new faces as well. And then when you speak to some people and you've known them for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and then suddenly you realise who they are, and the penny drops. That's quite a moment as well.
I won't ask who that was.
There was a few people who turned up, like people who sit around in the Ubuntu-UK IRC channel, and they turned up and came over and introduced themselves and said hello, and it was really good. They've never been to a party before, and
in their lives.
In some cases, maybe, yes. But yeah, they've not been to a release party before, but it was good. It was nice to see.
So users as well as some developers and, all the well-known people.
Yeah, there was Canonical people there, non-Canonical people, like other Linuxy people like Matt Garrett, who works for Red Hat now.
Yeah.
He was there and, like, I'm not going to name drop loads of people, but there were lots of Canonical people there and developers and us as well.
Cool.
Okay. So now that it's out, should we be advising everybody to upgrade to Jaunty?
I don't know. Should you ever advise people to upgrade?
Well...
If people are quite happily running Hardy still from a year ago now, then I'd say...
Or an LTS release.
That's what I was going to say. Hardy, right. Yeah, from a year ago. Then I would say, then if they're happy with that, stick with that. But, you know, if they want newer stuff... I mean, there are some nice bells and whistles, aren't there?
And if they know that something's fixed in the kernel that's in, this release, then yeah. But I don't know, there's nothing that really...
the notification stuff. People quite like notification stuff.
and some others quite hate it.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it's tricky because it's not a major, loads of new stuff in it.
The boot speed though, man,
yeah, that's true.
Got noticed the difference.
But we talked about last week, like whether you're going to be interested in.
So for the average Joe, he's got a desktop in their room and it sits there most of the day, sort of doing nothing more than a bit of browsing, a bit of surfing, a bit of this, bit and that. Probably there's no real need to, is there?
Well, either way, EXT4 is.
Well, EXT4 is
supported
since like Hardy.
What the hell is EXT4?
It's
I know, but what I'm saying is, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's the thing that goes on behind the GUI and whatever.
Well, no, but it's a new thing that makes your machine potentially faster.
But it's been there since about Hardy or so. So
has it?
Not in the installer, it hasn't.
You could do it in a bit tricky way, but yeah,
no, not in the installer.
But it wasn't
an option to go EXT4.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a few things. So, what is there? Boot speed, the new notifications, EXT4, a few updates to apps.
I think the thing is, the question for me is, should we be encouraging people to use what are essentially development releases, like in between LTS ones, that and they're tagged as development releases?
I think that's arguable,
no,
to be
they're
honest.
Bug fix releases.
Well, it says there's a new release, and in the upgrade manager, there's a new development release available.
It may say that. It'll say that before the release, yeah.
Yeah. But also, it doesn't come up to that to a normal person either. That will only come up if you open it using a particular
minus
switch.
D.
Yeah.
It says distribution release. I
see. Can you see the difference, though? It's a subtle difference.
Yeah, it's a subtle difference.
It means almost the same thing. But
yeah, I mean, development release, distribution release. The point is, it's not a long-term support release. It's there's new things in there. There may be a bit of breakage. Should we be telling people to wait a month or two before downloading it if they're not geeky technical users?
Well, there was one guy who posted on one of the lug lists this week saying that he was disappointed because he upgraded his mail server the night Ubuntu Jaunty came out, 9.04 came out. He upgraded his mail server and it broke his mail server. And he was really annoyed and he thought it should work on day one, which arguably, you know, it should work on day one. You know.
If we contrast here and say, well, with Windows, would you wait till Service Pack 1 comes out? Or would you use, would you use it when it first comes out?
Well, the same with anything. You know, with any application, it depends on what you're like, whether you're the kind of person who goes for the very latest crack straight away, or whether you wait for a month, or you wait, or you stay one release behind, or 6 months behind, or something. I don't know. Each to their own. You know, if you're that kind of person, then go for it.
Well, something as important as a mail server, I definitely wouldn't. Well, I might test it out on a development.
Want to run an LTS
or something like that? But
wouldn't you? Yeah,
definitely.
Unless it was some killer feature in a newer release that you desperately need, then stick with an LTS for servers.
I mean, the mail stack on Jaunty is quite sweet. It's it does a lot more for you, setting up for such as spam filtering and doing IMAP integration as well. It does a lot more out of the box than any other release did.
But that's probably going to be more useful for people who've got an unconfigured box.
Fresh install.
Whereas someone who's upgrading an existing box, is there anything in the new server other than stuff like the screen profiles.
Yeah, I mean, security patches should always go back, and screen profiles, you know, there is a PPA to run that, although it's better in Jaunty. But.
Yeah. So are we a bit about the new release?
Well, not so much the features, but just the whole kind of process. I mean, development releases are an opportunity for us, you know, as a community to sort of have a bit of a party and to say, look at what we've achieved in this release cycle. But, you know, should they mean that much to people outside of the development community and the immediate sort of Ubuntu fanboy community?
Have we become jaded because it's every 6 months and this is the 10th one? Is it 10th?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, 10th one.
I mean, I'm always really late upgrading because I don't like my applications to break, and particularly when I try to do things like a podcast every couple of weeks. If you upgrade at the wrong time and it breaks, then, you know, people get cross.
Especially if stuff like your audio stack breaks, which is, you know, quite critical to a lot of people. They can't, you know, watch movies, listen to music and, you know, the kind of stuff that your average Joe does. But that sort of stuff arguably should get better with each release. But we've seen historically it doesn't. Sometimes it gets worse.
Yeah. So I'm always a little bit reticent to sort of make that commitment and upgrade.
So is that why you wait maybe a month or two to see what the lay of the land is, see what other people have expected, let everybody else have the pain
and catch up
after?
I mean, there was a bug with Ardour in Intrepid, in the current, well, not the current release, the release has just stopped being current, where you couldn't import audio.
That's not a bug, that's a feature.
Well, that remained unfixed for the whole of Intrepid, and it was quite a major bug and has caused me some headaches. And that's one of the reasons that I kind of always a little bit nervous about doing upgrading and try to look for critical bugs on Launchpad for packages that I'm really interested in. And, you know, yes, there's one argument that you say you should be running a development box and then you can report these bugs before the thing's out, but I can't run two boxes.
Now, of course, what we should see in Carmack is possibly the ability to roll back so you can do a test update and see what you think of it. And if you think, oh, I'm not so sure about
this. In fact, you know what? We talked about that in, like, episode 3. I think one of us said that we really wanted a way to do upgrades that were completely rollbackable.
Season 1, episode
3. Yes.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah,
so, I mean, people were just leeching our ideas.
Yeah. We see the future.
Some people have been tweeting and denting. Colin McCarthy says he's very happy with 9.04 on the desktop, although indexing appears to have an issue. He's going to reformat it anyway for EXT4. And his netbook remix is sluggish on his EPC 701.
Hang on. You don't actually need to reformat EXT4, do you? You can just mount it, and then it's based on the same thing. You can just mount it, and then you can't go back to it, but you can.
Yes, you can. You can go backwards.
Backwards,
you can go. You can go up to EXT4. And you can go backwards to EXT3.
Yeah. You just lose the EXT4 features when you go back.
Well, yeah, I guess you can go back to EXT2 still. You just use the journal, So,
but yeah, Netbook Remix, you know, being sluggish on his EPC.
Well, I only played it on. I only used it on my USB stick. I didn't actually install it, and it was a bit sluggish. Yeah. I didn't like the GUI either.
Is that the one with the like fully maximized everything? I get confused
pretty
with
much,
the mobile
but it's definitely aimed at something with a touch screen.
Right.
It would be useful for that, but I like my desktop.
Mm. I use Easy Peasy, which is essentially Netbook Remix. but packaged by an outside party on my Acer Aspire 1. And that's pretty good. I've got used to the whole maximizing thing. And you can see with a relatively small screen, it's important that it does that.
Yeah.
And there's a few weird applications that don't quite follow that convention, but mostly just works.
See, I actually have Ubuntu Network Remix on my EPC, but I don't actually really use my EPC anymore. You know, I use it probably once every other month or so.
See, I put CrunchBang on mine because I do use it. I thought I need something that just works, and the Netbook Remix just irritated me with the fully maximizing Windows and the stuff. It just felt wrong to me. And yeah, I think you're right, Simon. It does need something that's got a pen or a touchscreen.
It definitely works. I mean, it's a great looking interface, and I can see that for somebody who's going to buy a brand new netbook, it would be pretty cool.
Or a portable device that's got
really
touchscreen.
Great, but for old farts like us who've been using computers for a long time, who like the way they do things, it's possibly a bit new.
It's got to be better than Zandros, though, isn't it? I
mean, old dog, new tricks.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Actually, I quite like the Zandros. I mean, wifey's EPC, hers has got Zandros.
I didn't even boot mine. I don't think
really? Did you wipe it straight away?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm. Matt Molyneux says he upgraded his mum's machine, and his response is meh. He's annoyed that he couldn't go from 804 to 904. And says it's not as smooth as upgrading from Fedora.
You can.
Which isn't right.
You can go from 804 to 904.
As long as you go via 810.
No, you can. See, this is the thing. There's a lot of misinformation about upgrades. You can, for example, upgrade on the command line by editing your sources list and doing a dist upgrade. No, let me finish. You can do that. You can upgrade from an old release to a new release without going through everyone in between. It's just not recommended. It can be done. I upgraded a machine that was on 7.04 last week, and I went from 7.04 to 7.10, and then I think 7.10 to 8.04, and then leapt from 8.04 to 8.10 and skipped. 7.10 to 8.10, and I skipped 8.04. Now, it's not recommended, and it might break, and there might be problems with some of the packages, but you can do it. It's not that it's absolutely verboten.
But what are you trying to do in doing that?
Skip the 200 meg download of the one.
But what I mean is, what are you trying to do by going from 7.10 all the way to 9?
Because 7.10 is unsupported.
No, but what I mean is, why don't you just download it and do a clean install?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's certainly another way to do it. But an in-place upgrade means you get to keep all your settings and, you don't have to, stuff.
I think one of the reasons people change to Ubuntu is so they don't have to keep reinstalling. I mean, one of the things about it is you're meant to just be able to permanently upgrade and not have to worry about reinstalling every year or so.
Yeah, I hear people in the Fedora and Red Hat community, and I'm not flaming, I'm not having a go at these other distros, but I hear that people have problems with upgrades in Fedora and Red Hat. Thanks for that.
Mez on Twitter, Mezzle, says he's indifferent about the upgrade. He likes the notification icons, but not the notification area. He thinks they're pretty, but he doesn't like them. Make of that what you will. Somebody called Six Hat is very happy, has installed Jaunty on 3 machines, and it says it's very, very fast. Probably the most important release of Ubuntu ever.
Blimey.
Yeah.
That's bold.
Lopter, again, says he's very happy with the server, which he did a fresh install of, but not so much with the desktop where he attempted an upgrade. And James Eaton says he'll be sitting on Hardy. He needs the stability provided by the long-term service release.
And that's why it's there.
Yeah. See, whereas we like sit on the edge of our pants, and
I'd rather not sit on the edge of your pants.
It's been rather light fortnight on the news front, however. Here we go. Jaunty Jackalope was released on time to become Ubuntu 9.04, with an article on CNET describing it as slick as Windows 7 and Mac OS X.
Is it really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty nice.
I've tried Windows 7 and there are a few nice slick things in there as well. But, yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that.
So the obvious new things in 9.04 are the new login screen, the new GDM theme.
Yeah, that's come under a bit of stick.
Yep. But I quite like it, actually.
Yeah, I quite like it. It looks quite nice.
Notification area. There's been a bit of stick about that as well. boot speed.
There's been a bit. No, there isn't.
My desktop boots in, I think, from grub to the logon screen. I think it's under 10 seconds now.
How long from power on?
Well, ages, but there's nothing Ubuntu can do about that. Because that's BIOS and stuff.
We could use the Linux Linux BIOS, which has been renamed. Use that.
I'm not that dedicated or stupid.
The other thing is the network manager improvements, and also Wubi's had a rewrite.
Hang on, with the network manager stuff, you had some awesomeness with that, didn't you?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll talk about it later.
Last time we mentioned that in a survey of companies considering a move away from Windows XP or Vista, 24% were considering Ubuntu.
Yay.
The full breakdown shows Red Hat in the lead. Ooh. Then Ubuntu, with SUSE Linux bringing up the rear.
That's pretty good. I should say that macOS was right at the top above all of the Linux versions.
Really?
But
oh, no.
As people at work keep telling me, it's based on Linux.
What, Mac? Well, we have a friend who works for Apple, and he tells me, we're the same, aren't we? We're the same underneath. No. Database mega corporation Oracle have agreed to pay $7.4 bazillion for Sun Microsystems, raising a whole load of questions about the future of MySQL, VirtualBox, and OpenOffice.org.
Yeah, it's a worrying time, I think, obviously, because a major database vendor's now got a major open source database. Mm. What are they going to do with it?
I mean, I think what really gets me is this all started when IBM said they were going to buy Sun, didn't they? And then suddenly Oracle went, oh, we can be one of the big player as well. And it's like, why is this this fascination with trying to buy out other companies?
He's saying Oracle aren't a big player.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, they're just trying to... I mean, you know, IBM said they were going to do it, and Oracle went, well, we can prove we've got bigger...
cojones.
Bigger cojones than IBM. Thank you, yeah.
Ubuntu Open Week is well underway. It started on Monday the 27th of April, today, as we record this, but Wednesday... by the time you get this.
Optimistic.
Hopefully. And it runs until the end of the week, so you probably have a day or two left to join in. And the Southeast USA Linux Fest is happening on June the 13th this year. Go along and find out about that. There'll be a link in the show notes.
But of course, with the Open Week, people can actually catch up with what they missed. You know, they can actually read the logs and extracts and stuff, so sounds fun.
A new release of Ubuntu is an opportunity to celebrate the hard work of the community and the Canonical employees that have both contributed to a distribution. But sometimes, and this release in particular, it seems like there's a little bit more stress between the two, not factions, that's not quite the right word, but you know, the two sort of sides of the coin, if you like. In particular this time, about the update notification area and the signalling of when there's a new update or security updates available for your system. Now, we talked a little bit about this in a previous episode, and I don't really want to talk about that event specifically so much, but just the idea of when the community might have too much voice in the decisions and when a company, a commercial entity, should have the right just to tell people to shut up and put up with it, or whether the community should always be listened to. Are the users always right? So Alan's been following this debate quite closely and has commented on a few times. What are your thoughts on this?
For that specific bug, yeah, I am willing to just let this release slide and see how it works out. I'm not necessarily majorly pro the changes or against the changes for that specific issue, but I do think there has been a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth from actually quite a small number of people. Okay, there's 260 odd comments on that bug, but from mostly the same set of people. And it's the same set of people on both sides. You know, there's a few new people who've now upgraded to Jaunty and they're, you know, new users or they're existing users. For the most part, they seem to be existing users who are complaining about the change and the fact that they weren't listened to, or when they scroll back through the comments in the bug, they see that other people weren't listened to. So it's not necessarily that they weren't listened to, it's that the community wasn't listened to.
But there's a vision, isn't there? This whole thing was pitched at UDS back in December, and we saw a little animation of a mock-up of how it would work. And, yeah,
and there were complaints about that as well, that UDS is not a conference. It's a developer summit, and so you're not going to get users at UDS who can get involved in that conversation about this new strategy.
Mm. But Mark put it on his blog.
Yeah, he put one little video and a screenshot on his blog, and okay, it was a very lengthy blog post and went into a lot of detail about, you know, stuff, but there was no, I think from a lot of people's point of view, there was no option. It was this is the way it's going to be. And I think a lot of people don't like that. They would like to have an option to switch it off.
Define people.
Users.
Well.
And even developers as well. There's been some developers on that bug who've complained as well. But, you know, everyone's the same. There shouldn't be a hierarchy. It should be everyone has the same ability.
There is a hierarchy.
Well, there is.
Yeah, there's going to be.
But what I mean is developers and users alike can both voice their opinion and be listened to.
Maybe.
And it's always the developers who get to make the final decision, though.
Well, I mean, if it's the developers actually doing the work, then there could be a bit more debate there, really. You know, if people don't like it, then you know, the source code is open.
Fork it.
But the problem is, it's very difficult to do these things in a design by committee. You know, you end up with. Do you remember that blog post that
the giraffe
Celeste Lynn-Paul wrote about Pigeon?
Not about giraffes.
No, it was about. It was about. Do you remember when Pigeon had this problem where the input field, the developers of Pigeon decided to make that non-resizable, and some people got really annoyed about that and annoyed about the fact that there wasn't a button that you could press to make it resizable, the input field, and so they forked Pigeon and created this new one called Carrier IM.
Right.
And the idea was that the community would have more input on the design of this fork of Pigeon.
Yep.
Celeste's blog post was going on about design by committee doesn't work, and she showed a picture of the Homer Simpson's car that had been designed. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that. But she had a lot of good points about the fact that you can't do this kind of thing. It would never get off the ground. We would never have released last week if we sat and debated about it ad infinitum.
Yeah, and some people might have ideas about what they want, but realistically and practically, they're not actually the right way to do it from a design point of view.
Yeah.
They, you know, there might be a better way of doing it that actually suits everybody better, but it takes somebody from outside the project or with a professional design experience background or something to actually make that happen in a usable way.
It's also difficult to do it in a 6-month cycle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but should there be an underlying long-term project as well? As well as the 6-month cycle, should there be a sort of thinking about the next, you know, should we be thinking about the next LTS now?
There is. There's a project which I will find the name of in a minute because it doesn't spring to mind. It's Ayatana, I think. A-Y-A-T-A-N-A. A-Y-A-T-A-N-A. And it is the design project within the Ubuntu project to formulate that long-term plan of what the design
should look like. Did that actually get off the ground?
Yeah, there's a new team, new mailing list. It's all kicked off and Mark's posted to it saying, okay, what do we want to see in the new design?
There was a lot of talk at UDS about design and the influence of the user interface in Ubuntu, which perhaps more than there had been before. To my interpretation, anyway.
But the problem is UDS isn't where users can get involved.
No. But it was obvious that people were being employed to work on that aspect of Ubuntu where there hadn't been before. There was, you know, a new team was being formed and there was seemed to be some momentum in that direction.
Sure.
But the thing is with UDS, blueprints are formed. So this is what we'll talk about. And, I mean, they're generally ratified probably about a month before the actual UDS. So it does give people a chance to actually comment before they could add like comments to that, for example.
Yeah, but the Mark's blog post didn't come out until during UDS or after UDS.
I can't remember.
Because it was about the same time.
It was the same time because Mark showed it off in the plenary room at UDS, the new notification system, and nobody had seen it before then. Yeah, you know, I spoke to Mark a month before that or a month or two before that at the release party for Intrepid. And try to get out of him what this new design stuff was. Because he obviously knew that's what it was, this notification system. And he wasn't going to tell anyone, you know, outside a small core of people. And then, bam, to great fanfare, it was released at UDS. But no, there wasn't a great way for the community to get involved in that.
With this release, as we said at the beginning, there has been a number of issues where people have got quite excited about things they don't like. No, they've been, you know, very annoyed. And I think we touched on this on a previous episode, but what we're seeing more now is a very heavy saying, no, this is how we're doing it. It's not up for discussion. That's how I feel a lot of these are turning out.
Well, yeah, hang on. It's always going to come to that. It's almost a management of roles, and people need to understand what they can and can't do. As a user, I absolutely know that I can't do anything apart from voice an opinion. And getting wound up about it is completely pointless. It's a complete and utter waste of time. and the developers getting wound up back at users, again, is a complete and utter waste of time. Their developers read what's on Launchpad and get back to developing. Now, if it, you know, this sort of stuff goes on again, then surely we need to get, I won't say you know, the community manager involved, but a some sort of manager to say, look, guys, thanks for your input, and developers, shut up, get on with developing. But, you know, you need to keep things calm because this is just ridiculous.
260 comments on this one bug alone. Mm. That's,
and know, a lot of it's going over the same stuff over and over again.
Mm.
It doesn't move forward. And you find someone like Matthew Paul Thomas, who's one of the architects of this thing, ends up repeating himself, you know, over and over again. And you can see the guy's clearly, you know, wasting time, in inverted commas, having to reply to the same thing over and over again.
Honestly, when a bug report goes over 10, 15 comments, especially detailed paragraphs, I glaze over them.
Have a look at bug number one. How many comments are there on bug number
one? Yeah, when did you last actually read all them? I mean, I think I've read...
never read any of them.
I don't know. The number of comments is fair enough if it is a technical thing and people are trying to debug it or whatever through a series of comments. But when it's just rants...
Like a forum. People are using the bug report like a forum. They're for venting their spleen about how this annoys them.
Yeah, but it's the wrong medium to be doing that. I mean, they're basically using IRC via a forum.
Mm.
You know, if having a discussion.
So what's the right way? What's the right way? If the community felt strongly that this was the wrong thing, or that a thing, not necessarily this thing, but something in Ubuntu was wrong, what's the right way for them to articulate that?
Well, I wonder if it wasn't so much that they disagreed with it, but the fact that they felt they didn't have an opportunity to discuss it before it was implemented. I mean, obviously they do disagree with it, but
that's both, yeah.
If you have the opportunity, maybe you feel less bad about it, or less... you know, strongly about it, because you feel like you've had your chance to have your say. And I don't know whether there is the right place for doing that, because the forums are very much sort of user-based and helping each other out with problems with the distribution. There's IRC channels, and I'm sure it was discussed a lot in relevant IRC channels. There's mailing lists, but is Launchpad the right place for that?
I don't think it is. But where is the right place?
So what is, yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, there are. Well, that's one of the things this Ayatana team have a mailing list, they have a Launchpad team, and so there is a place now for the focus of the design stuff in Ubuntu, and hopefully people can get involved in that.
But what happened here was essentially, you know, Mark ended up posting saying, look, this is just how it's going to be for this release, we're going to give it a go, see what people think in this release and review it. But basically it's happening.
But stuff's happened before that's been duff, that's been reverted, like the spatial windows in one of the previous releases, and the crazy calendar with the half-naked people. You know, some of these are duff decisions that have been undone, and maybe we need to cut them some slack and, you know, try this stuff out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, for a distribution that prides itself on community involvement, having somebody essentially say no, even if it is essentially his toy...
Okay, so if he doesn't say no, then what happens then? The conversation carries on for months and months and months, and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And we don't get a release.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Mike Basinger on the Twitter or the Identica says that community involvement is never a hindrance, but in the case of the update notifier debate, the developer is allowed to have a vision, which I think is fair enough, a vision of the notification system, and they should be allowed to complete it before adding lots of community feedback. So that's almost a, you know, develop it and then throw it over the wall and then get your feedback on it.
That's management by process, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's really what they're doing.
Hmm. And Colin McCarthy says that and he's talking specifically about the Ubuntu update notifier. He says it's God's gift to software updating. Microsoft XP's forced updates and reboots are the work of the devil, which is obviously the truth. But Laura, over in the corner, has been adding her own comments to this. And she says that somebody basically has to make a decision in the end. And there are people for and against, and I guess the developers are the people who get to make that decision, or the design team or whatever. Users aren't designers. They have opinions about what they want in general. And developers aren't necessarily good UI designers either, which is a very fair point.
Does anyone else help but wonder whether some people are making a big deal about a small issue because they've got that freedom to do that?
No, I haven't really thought of it that way before. Fabian from the Linux Outlaws podcast, who should be busy recording his own podcast, not commenting on ours, because they do it on a Monday night as well. He says that if you think the community is the cause of the problem in this case, you know, your process is at fault, or one's process is at fault. Maybe the developers should reconsider their approach. Community involvement is a good thing.
Yeah.
Which it probably is. I think I agree with that.
I think this will just continue to roll on for the rest of this, the rest of this release, really.
Oh, well. Right. Yeah, well, we'll see where we are in 6 months' time.
We managed to miss the result of the competition in the last episode. Oops. The winner of the Ubuntu goodie bag, which contains a t-shirt, book, it was the Ubuntu Kung Fu book, and other bits and bobs, was Chris Yeriatsin from Switzerland. I do apologize if I've mispronounced your name, and mispronounced apologize.
I should also point out there's not an actual bag. It's just a collection of things. I did put goodie bag, but there's no physical bag.
I think we can get a plastic bag from somewhere.
Okay.
Or probably, oh God.
Same no, Laura's, same giving, Laura, carrier bag.
Laura's giving me filthy looks. Not a plastic bag.
Probably from our local generic supermarket.
Yes, yeah, that'd be good. We should also give a special mention to Scott James Remnant, who managed to get the answer to the question wrong.
Fail.
An especially good effort, given the question was about his software project. Well done, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
I suspect it was slightly tongue-in-cheek. I don't know.
Right, so a new competition to celebrate the release of Jaunty. We've got a limited edition t-shirt from UDS Jaunty. If you'd like the chance to win this prize, email in your answer to this question. Where was UDS Jaunty?
A. Barcelona.
B. Prague.
C. Mountain View.
Or D. Cliff Richard in 1973 with congratulations.
Email your answer to competition@ubuntu-uk.org by Sunday the 10th of May. Good luck, everybody. We are delving back into the murky depths of the Ubuntu ecosphere with Alan's strange naming of the segment.
Look, if anyone doesn't like the name of it, please suggest new names for this.
We could call it Black Box or like just ecosphere. Just
sounds
okay,
good.
Okay, right. It irritates Dave. Let's keep it.
Yeah. Tag an 0845 number to it as well. And the first thing in the ecosphere this week we have found is that Pascal Turgeon has made a blog post about the non-redistributable stuff that's in Ubuntu's repositories still, including things like DVB firmware. And he said he either saw a bug about it or made a bug posting about it a while ago, and there's been a little bit of action on it, but generally there's still quite a bit of non-redistributable stuff in there.
Very interesting read.
It's not actually necessarily non-redistributable. It's more a case of we don't actually know for sure. Because a lot of the DVB firmwares come from companies that are quite happy to give it out, but we just haven't got a copy of the license that says we can do that.
We've just, the bug reports have got like, please include this firmware, and it just links directly to a .fw firmware file with no license, no indication of where it came from or anything.
And actually, I tried to get a copy of the agreement for a quite popular DVB card about a year or two ago, and I wrote to the person actually hosting it on their own homepage. There was also the Linux DVB project was hosting it, and also the manufacturer. And I tried emailing all three, and I couldn't get a response. Basically saying, "Can I have a copy of the license so we can include it?" And I didn't get anything from anyone.
Of course, the difficult thing is if you start leaving this stuff out, then people's tuners and things stop working.
Yep,
and then they get complaints.
It's much the same as the state of wireless firmware, like Broadcom drivers, that kind of stuff. You know, the stuff we don't put in the kernel. But this somehow is.
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, technically, legally, you should err on the side of caution. And
yeah, totally.
But I suspect sometimes the manufacturers aren't being very clear, as Dave was saying, about what license is under in the first place.
Yeah.
And maybe there has been some communication going on that we don't know about that says, distribute it, you know, it's all fine.
Yeah.
Right, next, to save a significant amount of space, about 6 meg, we dump bloated C-based Rhythmbox and include the Svelte lightweight C-based, C-sharp-based Banshee.
Yeah, this was a blog post from Joseph Shields, who's Direct Hex on IRC.
Okay. He's quite big on his C-sharp mono, I believe. Yeah.
And I guess it's for saving space on the CD, the distribution CD, which is obviously quite limited, so 6 megs quite a lot.
That's quite a chunky amount of space, really, isn't it?
Plus, Banshee's pretty good. But Rhythmbox isn't.
Yeah, hasn't Rhythmbox been put on pause? Isn't it's not
going to be Yeah, that's part anymore? Of the point he makes in the blog post.
But you can unpause it and it carries on playing from where you left.
Well, the developers said, we mentioned this last time.
This last week.
Yeah, that he's not doing any further development. It's just bug fixes.
So there's a disk space saving to be made, and you get arguably better application at the end of it as well.
Yes, and an arguably more actively developed. Well, not arguably. It is more actively developed. application. But the downside is it's mono.
Solaris Mansur come up with a suggestion about replacing Xane with Gnome Scan. Now, this is the tool for scanning documents using a flatbed scanner, presumably.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of his reasons for wanting to, to be honest.
Well, basically, he says that Xane is horrible.
Yeah.
It is. It's so old interface. And crusty, isn't it?
It's like GTK1 or something like that.
But it does have features that Gnome Scan doesn't, like network scanning.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite featureful, and it does work, but it is not a very intuitive interface.
Like I said before, I bought my new HP printer scanner copier thing, plugged it in, opened up Xane, and I wanted to scan 11 pages, put the pages in, press the scan button, done.
See, I do network-based scanning, and I do that via scripts that work via command line tools, and that can go straight into GIMP and things like that.
Yeah, that's not ideal for end users, though, is it?
I don't know. I mean, I can actually network scan by pressing the button on the scanner, and it will appear in GIMP on my desktop.
But how much of that is out of the box going to work?
Okay. The packages, the package. Okay, it's just package.
Put a GUI on it, and I'm sure it'll be lovely. But yeah, the idea of having a nice front ended thing,
a simple thing that most people can use, and if you really want to get heavy with it, you can install Xane and live with the pain of it.
Well, it's not that painful, is it? Ruben Romero Cordero, I think, has posted on the Ubuntu marketing list about the Spread Ubuntu marketing site. It's been on, I think it's been on his one of his personal domains or on a bit of hosting that doesn't look like it's an official site. And the idea of the site is that he wants to promote Ubuntu and do that with a centralized repository for things like posters and artwork. And
DIY marketing. So there was a DIY marketing page, wasn't there?
Yeah, there still is a DIY marketing page on the wiki, but this looks nicer. It's like a bit more Web 2.0.
It's based on the Spread Firefox, wasn't it? Because that was hugely popular, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's going to have... Well, the idea is that it launches soon with an official domain.
Ooh, cool. Chris Rosen has posted about the ATI drivers being broken in Jaunty. This never goes away, does it? There's always one driver manufacturer or another who is busy messing things up for everybody.
Well, it's pretty bad for all of them, apparently, in Jaunty, because...
the NVIDIA one's broken as well.
I've heard of a few people reporting breakage with NVIDIA, and the Intel driver sucks a bit at the moment as well.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know, it's lose all round.
But every so often we get, ATI got bought by AMD, and it was all going to be a fantastic open source thing, and that hasn't happened yet. And then NVIDIA were going to be the open source re-implementation of the NVIDIA drivers, and that's going on, but not... You know, not done.
I don't think we're alone on this. I think Windows people have this kind of problem as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, to be fair, I mean, we say, oh, you know, they're not really coming out with it. But, I mean, we start to think this about Java, Sun open sourcing Java. We thought, it's never going to happen. We were waiting. We had to wait for about 18 months or so. It did happen eventually. So I think we probably will see it.
We've been waiting for decent 3D graphics support for years.
Yeah.
Since, like, you know, before I started using Linux.
Yeah, but it's only been getting serious for about a year or so, hasn't it?
Mm. Well, the bad thing about this is actually that Linux gets a bad rep. And it's nothing to do with Linux. It's the manufacturer's not providing the drivers.
Yeah.
I mean, Ubuntu has done leaps and bounds to make it easier to install non-free...
rubbish drivers.
Yeah.
It's really easy to install broken drivers.
But in this case, they're not there. Or, you know, they don't do the 3D acceleration, so you don't get all the Swish goodness that so much effort is going into polishing the desktop.
Come on, vendors, get with it.
Yeah.
Right, issue 24 of Full Circle magazine is out. We've got an ad in there.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, Ronnie Tucker, who manages the Full Circle magazine and has done since the start, 24 issues ago, posted to the marketing list asking for adverts because he had a couple of spare slots. And I said, oh, I don't suppose you can do one for the Ubuntu podcast. And he created it himself. It's very nice. Very kind of him.
Yeah, and you can download the podcast from inside Full Circle magazine by clicking the link.
Excellent.
So now, having heard about it on this podcast, you can go and download Full Circle magazine and download the podcast. Now, hang on.
Of course, if you also print out the PDF, you also can't click the actual printed copy either. You can only click.
You can't click on a piece of paper.
You can't print out our podcast either.
I know. That's a bug, that is. We need to fix that. Daily builds of Chromium are available. Now, this is the free software implementation of Google Chrome, of course. We did hear about it a few months ago now, but they were actually saying, don't use it. although
no, they're saying don't file bugs on it. Don't report bugs to the developers. Don't blog about it. Don't use it.
Keep it secret. We're doing these daily builds, but please don't publish the fact we're doing these daily builds.
And a few people have blogged about it.
That's one way of dealing with the community, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the reason is they know that it's broken. It's like this is so badly broken. We know
it's not,
any bug fix.
It's not. I tried it and I was pretty impressed, to be honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, it works in as far as you can browse certain sites, but there are breakages. Like most of the have you tried any of the dialogues? They just don't work. So yeah, it's a bit broken.
The actual launcher also opened up a terminal window first, if I remember correctly.
Nice. Well, it's a debug, useful.
Menus are overrated anyway.
Yes. Matt Zimmerman has written about how he migrated to EXT4 on his blog, on his jaunty laptop. And I tried it out myself and it works. It's really
excellent.
Cool.
And the new features did what for you?
Now it's funny you should say that. He also mentions about how you can improve performance using some of the new features in the EXT4, but in order to take advantage of those, you need to follow some of the steps that he goes through, but it's actually quite easy. So for example, you can end up with quite fragmented files in EXT3, especially very large files or files that get accessed a lot, like some of the SQL Lite databases in his example that come as part of Firefox. Or if you're using VirtualBox, the big images.
Did you say MySQL or SQL Lite?
He said SQL Lite.
Oh, okay. I need to... Yeah, I wasn't not listening fast enough.
So what you can do is those files become fragmented, and what he suggests you do is copy them to create a new copy of the file and then delete the original and rename these back to make the shrink them down and use less extents, and apparently that's better for EXT4.
And he said that his IMAP store, which is obviously lots of little files, was quicker as well.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, he did some sync tests and things like that.
So now you've done a migration, are you feeling the speed?
On my desktop, I've got two installs, one that's using EXT3 and one that's using EXT4. And I don't know why it is, but the EXT4 seems to rattle the disks a bit more. I don't know whether it's doing more I.O. or it's throwing more data at the disk faster or flushing faster or something, but... It's probably, my PC is louder with the EXT4.
It's probably another crayon inside rattling around.
That could be it.
Stephen J. Vaughan Nichols has written an article on computerworld.com about the slowest machines that can run Linux acceptably.
Yeah, I chucked this in because I thought it would be a good question to ask you guys. I know we've talked about the low power machines we've got, but what's the absolute slowest thing you run Linux on?
The Viglen MPC, it's got to be pretty slow. It's a 400 megahertz
AMD Geode
with 128 meg of RAM, or might even be more
than
that.
No, it's half a gig.
It's half a gig of RAM, so it's quite a lot of RAM, but a pretty slow processor.
I've got a Panasonic Toughbook at work. I'm trying to put damn small Linux on, but I'm really struggling.
And well, when what's it does,
I can't remember. It's one of the old ones.
Right.
But it does clunk and work quite a bit.
I think the slowest box I'm running it on is a 633 megahertz with 192 meg of RAM, I believe.
Is that full Ubuntu?
No.
What's that running?
That's a headless Ubuntu server.
Well, Stephen, in his article, talks about running it on a Pentium 2 266. And that's not Ubuntu, that's sort of Puppy Linux, lightweight things. And he ran damn small Linux on a 33 megahertz 486 PC.
I thought I won with my 233 running IPCOP, Pentium 2 233.
I think having it as an embedded device or an asterisk server or a headless box doesn't count.
That's cheating.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be something that runs a GUI and that you actually use to do work.
Actually, we should link to, there's a page on the Hampshire Lug Wiki, Hugo's random benchmark, where it's something it's really stupid. In our local lug, we a lot of us ran this benchmark, which basically gets Perl to count to a billion or something, and you time it and see how long it takes. It's completely pointless. It's not a benchmark, and we've posted the stats for all of these. We should link to that because that's quite cool. Because at the very, very bottom of the list is some of the slowest rubbish hardware that runs it.
I tried that on like a 16-core server once. And I'm sure it only uses one core.
It does.
I was expecting to get like really excited. I was going to take like nanoseconds to do it.
I keep nagging Hugo to make a multi-core version of his counter.
He needs to rewrite Perl.
Well, there is that as well. I did ask him to make a multi-threaded version, but it wasn't happening.
The slowest one on there at the moment is a 133 megahertz SGI box, which took 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes.
And the one at the top, the one at the top of the list takes 5 seconds or something to count to a billion.
No, less than that. Oh, no, sorry. That was me reading somebody put deep thought in there, yes. Which is 0.0001 seconds. Very funny. Yeah, other than that, it's a 3 gigahertz box, which takes about 5 seconds to do. Yeah.
From the Twitter sphere, Scrullyontis, says he's got a power PC, 233 meg with 128 meg of RAM running Ubuntu.
Yeah, I think that's his daily machine, actually. He sits on IRC in that all the time.
And Rid Sevilla, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that, has got a Pentium 3, 500 megahertz, 128 meg of RAM running Gentoo.
So, wow, yeah. That's hardcore.
Yeah, boot speeds are there, presumably.
I wonder if he actually compiled it on the box.
Or farmed it out, yeah.
Well, if he's compiling it on the box, it's probably still compiling, isn't it?
Yeah. I've actually got a 486 in the loft, and I might actually try Ubuntu on there, actually, this week.
Yeah, give it a go, and then you can report back in the next episode. And see how it goes.
If it hasn't got clogged with dust and otherwise damp and broke. But yeah.
Well, that's about it from the ecosphere this time. It's time for your feedback. Alan, who's the first email from?
It's from Ed Hewitt, and he says, in your last podcast, you talked about the Rhythmbox developer stopping work on the project, and you all thought the project might end. About a year ago, Ed and another developer took over an open source project called G-Fire. He thought he would tell us. I can't recalculate the tenses and the, so I'll just read it. He says, I thought I would tell you how it's gone. G-Fire is a plugin for the Pigeon IM client, which allows the user to connect to the X-Fire network, which I had never heard of.
No.
X-Fire is a very popular chat network aimed at gamers.
We've never heard of it.
I was going to say, ever so popular that none of us have heard of it.
Stop scrolling the screen, I can't read it, Tony. Which allows gamers to chat with friends while they're in the game, keep track of other gaming stats, and allow people to join others in games. Basically, it's like Xbox Live for the PC gamers. However, the X-Fire client is Windows only. Boo. This means G-Fire is the only Linux client, and it's an important project for Linux gaming. Yep, sounds like a good idea. Yep. In March 2008, the developer announced that he would not be developing G-Fire anymore, but he asked for people to take over. Ed offered to take over, as well as another developer. They got talking and decided where to take the project next. It's not been over a year since we revived the project, and we're very happy and proud with the way we've turned this project around. We've managed to release 4 versions of G-Fire over the year, new website, new community via forums and a new IRC channel, and a wiki. And the website is gfire.sf.net.
Well, that's a good tale of it happening and working.
So the project's not dying.
Yeah. And obviously not even just not dying, but actually
thriving. Yeah. Cool. Nice. Well done, Ed.
Yay!
Mark Faulkner has written in following our recommendation of Dropbox. I'm not sure whether we actually recommended Dropbox. We did talk about it.
I probably did.
No, actually, it might be our every episode mention of Dropbox.
Dropbox or Drobo.
Drobo. We love all the
proprietary nonsense.
And absolutely. Actually, didn't Drobo have some bad news recently?
Did they?
Who?
Oh, anyway, never mind.
Anyway, so Mark Faulkner wrote in saying, following our apparent recommendation of Dropbox, which was back in season one, he's been using it on several computers and thinks it's great. However, he asks if we've looked at the terms and conditions, as they're a bit scary. Basically, they own your soul. Any comments? Yeah, don't use proprietary software.
Don't use it.
Yeah. Wait for iFolder to be completed.
Yeah.
Carry a big USB stick around.
Yeah, big USB stick across all of your computers.
Self-replicating USB sticks.
Yeah.
Right, Dave Robertson wrote in. Just wanted to say thank you. I wrote in with a question about Kubuntu conflict way back in season 1, episode 16, he thinks, and was most surprised when it featured in the show. Thanks for that. The segment was very interesting. Also wanted to say that you shouldn't worry about the show quality now you're recording it live. Might change your mind after this one. I haven't noticed a difference at all, apart from one moment where somebody nearly choked on a biscuit.
That was Alan.
As ever, looking forward to hearing more and hope season 2 will continue to be fun-packed. Well, we try.
Thank you very much.
But there's no cookies in the cookie jar.
Right, we've got a voicemail.
Hi, guys. I've just recently discovered the podcast and I'm slowly making my way through all the old episodes. My name is Richard Fowkes and I've been using Ubuntu for a couple of years on the desktop, having been a user of other distros for about 10 years or so. And I'd just like to share a tip. If you're running out of disk space, you can free some up by removing the older kernels that you're no longer using. just make a note of the old kernels that you have listed in your grub config, and then use Synaptic to remove them. It's a shame Ubuntu doesn't do this by default, especially now that we have DKMS to automatically recompile third-party modules, but never mind. Thanks for your great work, and I'll keep listening. Okay, bye.
What a nice man.
Yeah.
Good man.
It's nice to have voicemails. You actually hear people.
Yeah. So leave voicemails, please.
It's a double whammy of fantastic, because it's he gave us lovely compliments and a great tip.
And we get to have a break whilst we're listening.
Yeah, this is true.
Okay, Josh Holland sent us an email, and he said, "You guys have no idea how happy that big band music made me feel." Okay. "I think I deserve special mention because I actually downloaded the first episode on my phone, resulting, I think, in going over the acceptable use for the phone, so I can no longer access the mobile internet. It was worth it, though." Oh, thank you. "You plugged all those people at Brighton Uni's projects, so I think, as a long-time listener, I deserve something similar." Well, do you now? Okay, fine.
Yeah, stop there.
Yeah, okay. "My project is called Suvat, spelled S-U-V-A-T, and its homepage is launchpad.net/Suvat. It uses the equations of uniformly accelerated motion to find various details about the movement of a particle."
You lost me after "it uses."
Yeah, it sounds riveting.
It's a physics thing, I think.
"It's written in Python with a C extension for speedier calculation. The actual writing is as far as I can see done, but I can't fathom out the packaging. If any listeners know these things, please get in touch with me on my email address or through Launchpad. Keep it up, guys. Great show. Oh, P.S. Stop saying Ubuntu-UK. According to ANSI, the character minus..."
Yeah, how do you read that now?
"Yeah, is either hyphen or minus. But I'm going to call it dash, just because you don't want me to."
Yeah.
So that's you not listening to the community again, Dave.
It's an efficiency saving. Dash is one syllable, whereas hyphen and minus are both polysyllabic.
I've really never thought about it that hard.
Oh, it's time saving.
Actually, no, we need to consult the community and raise a bug on Launchpad and have 260 comments about it.
Yeah. "Are you a dash person, a hyphen person, or a minus person?"
Simon Benny wrote in and says, "I just listened to the second episode of your show. I decided to give it a go downloading over the air to my Android phone." Oh, get you.
Yeah, sure.
"Which strangely works better with the OGG format than MP3. Well,
that's good to know.
It's not that strange. The format, we get a few complaints about the format of our show. You mentioned that the new VirtualBox has 3D acceleration. Do you know if it will allow Windows games to be played in guest sessions? Also, will any of you be at the Manchester release party that happened 4 days ago?" No, we won't be at the party.
Well, maybe. We'll have to wait and see.
Yes. what was the question that Tony just scrolled off the top of the screen?
About VirtualBox.
It was about the acceleration inside VirtualBox.
I think it doesn't do all of the extensions to OpenGL and DirectX that would be needed by very beefy 3D games. So it's simple 3D acceleration, basically.
The desktop effects type thing.
Yeah, and even then that breaks. So...
Why? Well, I say it's not perfect. I say suck it and see and let us know.
Yeah.
Excellent. Gordon Allett wrote in to say that he wanted to point out that one of the things raised as a positive for Ubuntu Tweak was that it removes old kernels. In Jaunty, there is a computer janitor in System Administration Computer Janitor.
Is that under the menu? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, System Administration. It will remove old kernels, amongst other things, that are not needed.
In inverted commas.
Yeah, I don't know how it defines not
basically
needed.
If you've got any packages on your system that weren't installed via a repository, it will tick those as being old and need to be cruft.
Is that what used to be called cruft remover?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
All right. So it's now a system janitor.
Computer janitor.
Computer janitor, sorry. Yes.
It actually got renamed twice, I think, because they wanted to call it system cleaner, but that was a trademark thing. So now it's computer janitor. Thank you, Gord.
Cafe Ninja, good man, has reviewed the podcast on his website, and we'll put a link to it on the show notes.
Yeah, he said some very nice things.
Giles Patterson. He emailed us and he said, "I just thought I'd drop a line, having been bitten by a combination of factors, which means that I won't be able to upgrade to Jaunty anytime soon. Basically, due to changes to X Server and ATI deciding to drop support for a vast swathes of their not-so-old product line, those of us with ATI graphics cards will be faced with the choice of sticking with Intrepid or making do with the open-source Radeon drivers and missing out on the 3D acceleration love. Compass and funky things that the new notification system in Jaunty brings. Both my home laptop and work laptop have now unsupported ATI HI cards in them.
Boo.
It's even more annoying as my work laptop is only a year old.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Appalling.
It's disappointing this situation has arisen. It certainly made me determined never to get another HI graphics card again. Hopefully the open source drivers will be able to add 3D acceleration before too long. But that's not likely to be until around September, October or so. Hopefully in time for the next release. According to some people's reports I've heard. At least my MythBunzi box has an NVIDIA card. So I have one machine I can enjoy the benefits of Jaunty on.
With the addition of nasty, evil proprietary drivers. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case.
Yeah, because the new notification thing does look pretty whack with without 3D acceleration or compensating.
Does it?
And yeah. Presumably, we talked about it in the previous episode, didn't we?
Looks fine.
And presumably, his MythBunzi box has got a full-screen GUI on it for most of the time, so it's irrelevant anyway, if it's a MythBunzi thing.
Mm.
Oh, well, that's some difficult times for graphics, then.
Mm.
And that about wraps up your feedback.
Except for what has been said on Twitter.
Which is what we're going to talk about now.
Nicely recovered there, Tony.
Yeah. Scralionitis says, feedback is that we rock. Well, that goes without saying.
Thanks very much.
We did know that. But feel free to tell us more often, please.
Mez says that we suck. Thanks, Mez. So do you. No, seriously, he says we should broadcast as we record for more random fun. Well, God, maybe. Maybe one day.
Monkey Junkie sent us, thanks for pronouncing my surname correct last episode.
Is that what, Junkie? It's not that hard, is it?
Simon Weirs.
Ah.
Or Weirs. I can't remember how he pronounced it.
Well, either way, you said one both, yeah. So you're lucky.
Covered all bases.
Yeah. Not many people manage it straight off, he says. Well, failed on that one, didn't I? And that about wraps up your feedback.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen of the Ubuntu UK podcast world, thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who took part via Twitter and Identica. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can email the show via podcast@ubuntu-uk.org or leave 30 seconds of voicemail on 0845 508 1986.
Or you can contact us on our IRC channel on the Freenode network, #Ubuntu-UK.
You can send us comments on Identica via identi.cast/UUPC or Twitter, which is twitter.com/UUPC, as well as getting updates from recording sessions.
And you can find us on Facebook, search for Ubuntu UK Podcast, and we now have a new Ubuntu UK Podcast fan page, not just a group anymore.
Do we have any fans? Is
we
it just us?
77 at the moment. Ooh, yeah.
I was creative an officer of that the other day.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Oh.
We welcome suggestions, material, tips, reviews, rants and feedback, both positive and negative, so please do get in touch.
Thank you to our network of community mirrors, which are listed on the website. Dave promised in episode one and Alan promised in episode two would be listed on the website.
Well, no, I promised to nag Dave.
You didn't, so you failed.
Okay, well, we'll get them on there this time around, won't
it
we?
It will be, yeah. But really, by the time you're hearing really this, will be next. Yeah. If not, well.
If not, then we'll say it again next time.
No, it will be there. It will be there. Trust me.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.